pretty rare that a concerted effort to remove a judge takes place at any time, anywhere. But this is gaining momentum, Paul, as you indicated in your newscast.
It's bipartisan now.
Yeah, and so this district judge, Orenstein, has been under fire for a while. And the issue is allowing violent criminals to be released, and then they dodge their commitments to come back to court. And in this case, on Monday, the link is that this 25-year-old suspect, Anthony Quessen, who is charged with fatally stabbing 44-year-old Benjamin Brawler, a state police employee with the Liquor Control Board. And I think it's a situation that's probably going to happen. But well, it's really hard to remove a judge.
Last year, Judge Orenstein was removed from hearing any arraignments by the Allegheny County President Judge because of the scrutiny over these no-cash bail decisions. And that came after a fugitive warrant was issued for a man who failed to appear earlier this week. Despite a lengthy criminal record, Orenstein released this man on non-monetary bond after he was accused of leading state police on a high-speed chase on Route 28. He nearly rammed a couple of cruisers. Fortunately, no one was injured. This guy, by the way, was eventually arrested in Florida at great expense to the county. They spent another $30,000 tracking down a man who was arrested here with, 9 kilos or something. It was a large amount of a powdery substance. There was a question whether or not it was all fentanyl or if it was cocaine or a mixture. But anyway, he had a large amount of drug. More than a kilogram of cocaine is what they say here. And they tracked him down in New York, and he was released as well by Orenstein.
So big pressure coming from Allegheny Council at-large member Sam DeMarco, as we heard over the last couple of days. He actually tweeted, "I issued a press release calling for the immediate resignation or removal of District Judge Xander Orenstein. After another dangerous suspect he allowed to walk free without bail has been arrested in a murder."
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see if that happens. But again, procedurally, very difficult. I never realized how difficult to remove a judge.
Well, the House of Representatives will have a resolution to vote on to begin impeachment proceedings. And I believe what happens is, if I have the order correct here, the resolution would then lead to actual impeachment proceedings in the House, and then the Senate would take it up after that. Maybe it's the House just passes it along and the Senate has the trial. I'm not sure how it all works, but they've got to go through a fairly jumping through a number of hoops to get it done. But that's what they're trying in Harrisburg, at least.
All right, you mentioned this ruling on ballot issues. Really important, obviously, as we get near the election.
The instructions on the ballots are really quite clear. You're supposed to put your ballot in a secrecy envelope, then put the secrecy envelope into the mailing envelope, seal it, sign it, and date it. It's that simple. But there are people who don't do that, and they cast provisional ballots in Butler County. They were told their ballots were not going to be counted because they didn't have the secrecy envelopes. And the Pennsylvania Supreme Court ruled yesterday that those people should be allowed to cast a provisional ballot that counts.
So will that make a difference
election? Well, it'll affect thousands of ballots across the state because, believe it or not, there's a significant number of people who can't follow directions. And the question is, legal, I guess the question was, are we going to bog down in procedure, or are we going to let these registered voters cast a ballot? And I would have loved to have heard the arguments on this. There's probably so much we don't know. And, you know, we should probably get someone who knows about this, backing up for a moment. We should probably get somebody who knows about this impeachment procedure to explain it to us here on the show.
We can do that.
Yeah. Anyway.
So the countdown to the election is on. We mentioned now President Biden coming to Pittsburgh. Donald Trump will be at State College Saturday at Penn State. And They continue to crisscross the region.
It's not clear, Larry, if President Biden is going to be doing anything other than political events, or what do they call them, political engagements. There could be fundraising, it could be, you know, small gatherings, or perhaps he will be doing some campaigning, but we don't know.
But we do know this, Dana Carvey will continue to imitate him on Saturday Night Live. If you haven't seen it.
Is it good?
It's pretty spot on. It really is. This 50th anniversary of Saturday Night Live, they've opened up every show with political content, and we have some new players, and we have some re-racks like Dana Carvey.
His George Bush was also very good.
Oh, yeah. It was so good, it got him invited to the White House by George Bush. He said, and I love this, how did he, you know, get to do his imitation? He said that George Bush, now this is the first George Bush, right?
Mm-hmm.
He said it's a cross between the old actor John Wayne, you figured that out all by yourself, did you? The swagger.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said in Mr. Rogers.
Oh, that's interesting.
So listen, so it's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. And he goes, now add the swagger of John Wayne. It's a few of those over there bad.
That's exactly right.
Those over there bad. Wouldn't do it. 1,000 points the light. That's how he got to do it.
Oh, that's funny.
And tonight, football. I think a lot of people are talking about it. It's in the news, front
Absolutely.
Page news.
Let's go Pitt Panthers. Hail to Pitt.
They got their new AD, Alan Green, 47 years old. Had a press conference yesterday. You're going to see him all over the news today. Also, he will be at the game tonight. He's excited. Went to Notre Dame. Has a very, very strong resume. And part of the attraction is to get somebody who knows how to handle this whole name, image, and likeness scenario in college sports. And hopefully he's the guy.
The financial end of college sports has been upended. It's a whole new world. And it's volatile. It's changing as we go down the road.
By the way, we're going to talk to Voice of the Panthers, Bill Hillgrove, right after the news at 8. Yeah, this is a special opportunity for Pitt. They're 6-0, haven't been undefeated to this point in the season since 1982. And Syracuse is coming on with their new coach, Fran Brown. They're 5-1. Top 10 quarterbacks in these two with Eli Holstein for Pitt and Kyle McCord, a Ohio State transfer for the Orange. So should be a fun night at AquaShare. Kickoff is at 7:30. Download the free Odyssey app. Take us with you wherever you go. AUDACY. I just edumacated some friends. And they're like, hey, Larry. I said, no, you can Bluetooth digital crystal clear quality sound through our app. And you also have access to a lot of great stuff. So check it out. AUDACY.
Edumacation is good for people.
Edumacated them. Yes. Yes, I did. Sunday, there's no Steeler game because it's Monday at home with the Giants. And we have our Pet Fest 24 presented by Subaru at Rockwell Park in the East End from 9:30 to 4. Bring your four-legged friends. Bring your two-legged friends. Participate in costume contests. Maybe a photo with Santa. Stop by any Subaru dealer for complimentary tickets, and for fine details, go to kdkradio.com. McDonald's. This is a nightmare for McDonald's to deal with the number of locations they have around the country. This E. coli story that broke on Tuesday late, and we talked about it yesterday. McDonald's has an issue with, apparently, their quarter pounder, and apparently it's the uncooked slivered onions.
Mm-hmm.
So they're already linked to, and I'm curious how this works. Like, if you went somewhere, how would you know until you get sick? You have to kind of retrace everything you did, and then somebody medically has to tell you what it is you have. Because I think everybody's at some point probably felt some discomfort after eating some food somewhere, right?
Well, sure. It's happened to me once or twice in a lifetime. But the presence of E. coli, maybe they have testing for that. Maybe that's part of the puzzle here.
Well, the CDC traced the source last month to the Quarter Pounders, and they believe it's the onions. That's not officially confirmed, but in 10 states, not including Pennsylvania, most of these cases were in Colorado. So McDonald's stock, and think about what a 6% drop in the first day after they had made some market recoveries, you know, in terms of their sales, and were doing well. But it would that stop you then from going through a drive-thru to get one?
No. No, not after some time had passed and they had a chance to address whatever the problem is. You know, if it is the slivered onions, I can see how this would be so widespread, because they're probably getting these slivered onions from a facility. They're probably bagged, you know, and, right, and dropped off at the different locations as the truck goes around the country. And so that's probably what happened. There's probably some contamination in the process of making these slivered onions, if that is indeed what it is, right. And it makes sense that it would be. So, hey, by the way, Larry, I found out what the process is to impeach a judge in Pennsylvania, so we can go over that in the next half hour.
Yeah, we can do that. I'm curious, because it's so difficult to do, even though judges not just here, obviously, around the country have been accused of egregious things outside of the courtroom, too.
Right.
And you just can't remove them.
Don't they have an ethics board for judges? Right. There's a judge, ethical judge review board or something like that.
Really reluctant.
Judicial ethics review board. There we go.
To do that. Really reluctant. And also, college enrollment. I want to mention this because we're going to share from the University of Pittsburgh, new athletic director Alan Green was introduced yesterday formally. And so I'll share some of his thoughts with you. You'll hear what he has to say. But in the meantime, Pitt's enrollment is up. They're doing great. But fewer freshmen showed up to college campuses overall this fall. It's because fewer enrolled, according to data. The total freshman headcount overall across the country down 5% from the start of the pandemic.
And just yesterday, I handed Rich Fitzgerald a piece of information about the number of Generation Z students who are leaving high school and moving on to something in the trades, and the number is increasing.
Well, that makes sense. Now, the people, you know, because of the cost, let's be honest, the cost of going to college,
it's prohibitive
for most people until you get that bill at the end of the road, and then, you know, then you've got to figure out, and we've talked about this extensively with Marty over the past year.
And I think that's why it makes such good sense, for example, for the government now, the state government, to require fewer degrees for many jobs working for the state.
Yeah, so it's all kind of pushing that way, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
This is the Big K Morning Show. Larry Richard with anchorman Paul Rasmussen. Yesterday, University of Pittsburgh formally introduced their new athletic director, 47-year-old Alan Green, and had an opportunity. I watched the entire press conference yesterday. So, Chancellor Joan Gable introduced Alan Green, who was very excited to be in Pittsburgh. And the natural question is, why Pitt?
So why Pitt? I got that question asked a lot of me recently of why Pitt. And I think there are so many different reasons why Pitt makes perfect sense. I had a chance to talk to our coaches, our head coaches earlier today before the press conference, and they are why Pitt. I had a chance to talk to some of our donors who support this university and support this athletics department. They are why Pitt. I had a chance to learn about the industrial history of this wonderful city and about the progressive nature, not just now, but 100 years ago, when you think about steel and you think about how to shape our country and shape our world, why Pitt? That is why. When we think about education, when we think about healthcare, we think about innovation and technology, that is why Pitt. I think about this humble community. I think about this down-to-earth community. I think about how genuine people are. That is why Pitt, incredibly unpretentious, incredibly proud. That is why Pitt.
And Alan Green comes to Pitt as a former director of athletics for both Buffalo from 2015-18, Auburn 2018-22, and most recently with Tennessee, and he has a connection, a big time, with Notre Dame.
And his last three positions at SEC schools had to do with finances and fundraising.
Yeah, I think that was a big factor for his attraction, because SEC considered to be very successful, particularly in football, and trying to figure out this whole world of name, image, and likeness, navigating, paying players. They're already getting paid now. So what are the guide rails that are going to be in the future? And he was asked about his, basically, you know, when you talk about it, his platform, his principles.
Our guiding principles, there's three main ones: athletic excellence, academic success, and social preparedness. Those are going to be the overarching principles of what we do. We want to make sure that our kids achieve in the classroom, achieve on the field and court to play, and perhaps most importantly, achieve in life. At the end of the day, we are educators. We are all here to educate young people and to prepare them for the rigors of tomorrow.
So I'm looking forward to meeting him tonight. He'll be at the Pitt game and meeting him face-to-face, welcoming him to Pittsburgh again. He has a young family. He's 47. His parents apparently flew in from the West Coast, his mom and dad from Arizona, to be here tonight. And what a proud moment that is for them.
Yeah, and he's found success pretty much everywhere he's gone. So I would expect that he's going to find success here as well.
It's funny because they had, you know, the media ask questions, and obviously they want to know, well, what's the game plan? Well, he said he doesn't have the formal plan. You just heard the principles under which he hopes to operate, but he has to navigate through all these changes and work with the coaches. But Jeff Capel, and I know our own Jeff Hathorne talked to him about it. He's the head basketball coach for Pitt and also on the selection committee. And basically he said to compete at the level in the world they live in now in college, they need money.
Lots of it.
Yeah. So, I mean, it really came down to that. In fact, Jeff talked to him about that, needing money, and I thought that was interesting.
He's innovative, not willing to sit on old ideas. He wants to be progressive and understands he needs to be aggressive in raising money in an era of NIL and soon paying athletes. Reasons Pitt Chancellor Joan Gable gave to hiring Alan Green as the new Pitt Athletic Director. Green's job now is to fund the sports programs and its athletes.
I don't ask for money. Never have. I explain a vision, express a vision, and let people enjoy the journey along with that vision.
In Oakland, Jeff Hathorne, News Radio KDKA.
Something I found ironic, by the way, in Pitt's schedule this year is a trip to Dallas for a game with SMU. SMU's football program was shut down back in the day for what we're doing now.
You know what? That is a great point. Before this was all quote-unquote legal,
right?
They were already doing that, apparently, and got shot down by the NCAA. And that's a really good point. Now,
boosters were heavily involved and pouring money into that program, and now look what we're doing. And I'm not saying that's bad. I'm just saying that how things have changed, and it's ironic.
Well, they're working to try to come up with guide rails, they call them, to try to figure this out, because there's two big factors in college sports. Transfer portal. Basically, in the old days, if you wanted to transfer either at the same level or up, you had to sit out a year. In other words, that was a deterrent from people just changing their minds. Now players basically could just go to whatever school that'll have them. And after games on the field, sometimes coaches have been accused of saying to other players, you know, why don't you come play for me next year? That kind of thing. So they got to figure that out. And the NIL money, they're talking about what is essentially a salary cap for college sports, so that universities.
You know, I hadn't thought about it that way, but you're right.
But you don't think some of them will sidestep that somehow? That's been going on.
I mean, look what they do in the NFL, restructuring contracts and, you know, guaranteeing money and delaying payment and all the stuff they do.
It'll be interesting to see where this goes. And for Pitt's new athletic director, Alan Green, it's on you to figure it out. Coming up right after the news at the top of this hour with Paul Rasmussen, we're going to check in with Paul J. Goff of the Pittsburgh Business Times, get an update on the new airport, and also some have expressed concerns with cracks in the new garage that they're building there, which is a $240 million garage, five-story, big deal.
And the question is, are these cracks superficial and cosmetic, or does it say something about the integrity of the structure?
And I would think they'd be very interested. Spokesperson for the Airport Authority, Bob Kerlick, says they're not structural issues, but we'll see. Meanwhile, we asked the question, what does it take to remove a judge from his bench or hers? And you've done some research.
Yes, it's impeachment if you're talking about the legislature. And I don't know what the courts locally can do or at the state level in terms of the ethics review boards, but in the State House of Representatives, they have the sole power, rather, to impeach a judge for misbehavior in office. They present articles of impeachment to the Senate. The Senate has a trial, and then it takes a two-third majority in the Senate to convict a judge.
Which is hard to do if it's
a significant number.
Because a lot of judges, different levels, are political seats. I mean, they run to represent.
This judge in question is an elected judge.
Right.
Yeah.
That's the point is, okay, now what do you do? So we're talking specifically about District Judge Xander Orenstein, who is under heavy fire from a number of different politicians here locally, asking for his resignation or removal.
Someone also asked me, and I don't know the answer to this. I don't have a knowledge of the law nearly close enough to make it even an educated guess. But someone asked if there could be prosecution, criminal prosecution, or maybe even civil prosecution against Orenstein for the decisions that led to the death of this man on the trail in Montour Trail.
Which absolutely has shocked people. And I've talked to a number of people who say, man, I've been on that trail, and I never felt threatened or never felt uncomfortable. You know, it was 2:30 in the afternoon. You know, beautiful day weather-wise. Just went out on the trail for a run. And
a year before, someone who was jogging in Point State Park was allegedly attacked by the same man who's now accused of murder.
So it's very, very frustrating because you feel like you had been warned, and the result of that, tragic for that family, just unimaginable.
The other workarounds, by the way, according to the Constitution, the outline I'm looking at here about removing a judge can be convicted of a felony, disciplined for misconduct in office, disciplined for neglecting or failing to perform their duties, or disciplined for conduct that prejudices the proper administration of justice. Sounds like that last one, huh?
We'll see where this goes. Meanwhile, coming up, an update on the airport in our next hour. Also, Dr. Mike, Bill Hillgrove, right after the news at 8, preview of tonight's Pitt-Syracuse game. The eyes of the nation will be watching Acrisure Stadium tonight for football fans. Thanks for joining us, Larry Richard, with our anchorman, Paul Rasmussen, and Paul J. Goff from the Pittsburgh Business Times, who you can see on the radio with our stream at kdkradio.com. Paul, good morning.
Good morning from lovely Washington, PA.
Yeah, you're in your vehicle, it looks like.
Yes.
Get ready to roll for the day.
Yes, I appreciate the traffic that I'm going to face on the Green Tree Hill in a little while.
Oh, yeah. We're here for you. Meanwhile, the new airport. A couple of stories, though. The one that you talked about, an additional $6 million acquired for the airport. And the total budget for this airport is?
I believe $1.5 billion. Probably going to end up a little bit more given inflation and, you know, the things that happen when construction happens.
So what do they need the extra money for?
They're getting it actually from the federal government, from the Department of Transportation, to basically go into the pot of money that they have already. So it's sort of a reimbursement. They've gotten, I believe, more than $120 million from the federal government over the last two or three years to build this new terminal, the landside terminal.
And we're still on track to open sometime next year.
Yeah, sometime after May, I would assume. You know, it's something that's, you know, desperately needed. I was just there on Friday, and, you know, it definitely shows its age, the airport. You know, built in 1992, that was a long time ago. However, the airport, you know, itself, this, it's going to take some time to, you know, what they say in business, commission, you know, so a factory like the Shell cracker plant or the ATI Breckenridge plant a couple of years ago, it takes a while once you turn everything on to make sure everything's correct. And that's going to be the case for the airport too. It's, you know, there's a new baggage system. There's going to be a lot of other things that they're going to want to make sure gets absolutely correct before it's ready for occupancy, I suppose.
Paul, is it your understanding that they're going to be doing a series of dry runs? Like, for example, they'll have people walk in the building and check bags and then have the bags go through the system and the whole thing, right?
Yeah, Paul, that's exactly right. I know that they will be doing that. You know, it's something that, you know, it's not, you don't want on day one, and especially not the management team at Pittsburgh International Airport and the Allegheny County Airport Authority. They don't want to have, you know, opening day jitters, first day anything. They want to make sure everything correct. And I would assume that it will exactly be the case.
And Allegheny Council President Pat Catena suggested there are a series of cracks in the new huge garage they're building. Bob Kerlick from the Airport Authority saying that's not a concern. They're not structural. Do you hear anything about that?
You know, I haven't reported about that. I do know Bob said that. So I'm really probably not the best person to talk to about that. I was actually working on a different story tangential to the airport about Mainspring Energy, which is going to build a new factory, really a clean energy factory with about 700 jobs at the same time that all that was happening.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because for those that don't know, this is a major deal, and it's going to be just adjacent to the airport. It's a linear generator system that can power off of all different types of fuel without burning fuel, which obviously everybody's looking to clean the air.
Yeah, it's going to be a really big deal. This is going to be the company's first full-scale manufacturing plant. It's been in business, Mainspring, for about 15 years. It's been in commercial production since early 2020. But this is the first chance it's going to have to scale up, and they'll be doing these, you know, power plants that can do anything from, you know, a mall or a hospital up to a data center or any kind of other kind of use. And it's a really important thing, I think, because it will be what they call behind the meter, which is you won't be needing to be put into the grid for your power needs. And, you know, there's a lot of things coming up the road between electric vehicles and new industrial activity, and then also data centers and AI. They're going to use a lot of power. And with our country's reduction in coal-fired generation and maybe the cap on some natural gas plants, new natural gas plants, the power is going to have to come from somewhere. Nuclear too, but that takes a while.
Paul, what's in the pipeline? Can you tell us anything that you're working on that we'll be looking forward to on the Pittsburgh Business Times website?
Yeah, I'm actually going to a conference right now about healthcare and some mental health funding and some new ways to do that, because that's a big deal. And I'm also working on a few other projects as well in the natural gas area as well.
Yeah, this energy thing, I want to get a deeper dive in that when this comes online, but with this mainspring company, this is apparently a huge deal. And you said, what, 600 to 700 jobs will come because of it?
Yeah, and it's really interesting because, you know, what's happening is Pittsburgh, which is so focused on, or has been for, you know, 150 years on coal, natural gas, oil. Oil was discovered, you know, not too far away from here, a little north of us, and natural gas right here, actually, and nuclear. It's been an energy production center for so long. And, you know, as the world goes to carbon free, goes to net zero, there's been some concerns that maybe Pittsburgh will be left behind. And this right here with Mainspring and then some of the other things that are being done, the hydrogen hubs, some of the things the natural gas companies are doing, solar, wind, and then also Form Energy, which has operations here, and they're going to build a big plant in Weirton for batteries, and Eos Energy, another battery company in Turtle Creek. Pittsburgh is really, you know, kind of turning the page and becoming a center of clean energy in the future. And I think that's something that, to me, as well as the jobs and as well as the factory and the economic activity, that's a really interesting story to keep writing about and to keep thinking about, because these are technologies that are going to keep us going into the future.
Well, Paul, appreciate the time. Safe travels as you head north.
Thank you very much.
We'll talk soon.
All right. Thanks. Take care.
Paul J. Gopp with the Pittsburgh Business Times on the Big K Morning Show. And yeah, Paul, he's not exaggerating the importance of all of these things. You know, we talked to Rich Fitzgerald yesterday about these things, you know, collectively in our 10-county region, so important for the future. And these jobs, adding jobs, really significant. You know, if you wanted to get into the trades, this would be a good time.
A very good time to get into the trades. And the training can be short. You can be in a matter of months on the job, like, for example, with a CCAC program.
Or you can get a paid internship. And you get an opportunity. At the end of the day, you don't owe anybody anything. Hint, hint.
Mm-hmm.
What a classic. When you hear those first few guitar notes, you know exactly what song it is.
Oh, absolutely right. This is a strange song for me, because when I was just getting into radio back in the late 70s, this was played a lot, and I didn't care for it. And then about 10 or 15 years ago, I heard it the right way, and it became one of my most played songs on my phone.
What a classic. And when they went to the Kennedy Honors, Led Zeppelin, they had the Wilson sisters Heart.
What a performance.
And she did a rendition of that that brought the house down. You can look that up. It's worth it. Trust me.
It's one of the best YouTube videos you'll watch all week.
Artificial intelligence. What do we do with this? The White House is expected to publish a national security memorandum on artificial intelligence today. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan also scheduled to participate in a, oddly enough, fireside chat on AI and national security hosted by the National Defense University at Fort McNair. But I'll be interested to see, well, what exactly are they going to tell us about? I mean, they're going to publish the do's and don'ts of artificial intelligence. What do we know? I mean, this stuff is popping up everywhere. Did you see?
Well, this is the problem is, Larry, is this the first time around with this?
Yeah.
And so you've got people of all persuasions making predictions about what we're going to use it for, you know, how big it's going to get, the kind of financial impact, you know. And then you have the doomsday people who say, well, this, you know, AI is going to become so powerful, it's going to just take over. Which sounds a lot like the Y2K stuff to me, but then I don't know much about this topic. I really don't. I'd like to know more. I am going to pay attention to what is coming out of the White House today on this.
What's really interesting now is yesterday, a mom who lost her child to suicide suggested that it was artificial intelligence that influenced that decision for her child to take their life. And now they're, you know, they're,
but like via social media?
Yeah, how do you sue or hold somebody responsible on a social media platform? This, you know, the artificial intelligence stuff is already out there. How do you sort through that and determine someone's behavior was instigated by something they saw on social media, which right. certainly can yeah. happen. Yeah. But then who do you blame? Just for instance.
That's a good question. You know, this also ties into another conversation that we're starting to have nationally, and that is the conversation about moderation and use of social media and mobile devices. You know, and that this comes on several fronts. Not only are we talking about restrictions on the amount of time that a child can spend using their mobile phone or on social media or both, but we're also talking now widely about collecting the phones in school so the kids can't have access to them and so they can learn.
To me, at some point, to truly learn and immerse yourself into a single subject, you can't be distracted. There are many things we do on a daily basis where you shouldn't be, but are distracted. Driving would be one. And until the mobile phone and then all the, I saw a guy yesterday, I see this every day. He comes flying past me, almost grazed me on the side because he was drifting.
Mm-hmm.
He had his phone to his face and I could see he was texting. It looked like he was using both hands, which means he had his knees on the steering wheel. You see this every day, right?
Yeah, he's apparently trying for a Darwin Award. Yes, I do. I see it every day. I saw a young lady pull up to an intersection, and when she was stopped, of course, up comes the phone, and then you can see her texting whatever she's doing with the phone, communicating in some way. The light turns green for her to turn left, and she's in the middle of something, and finally someone honks. And, you know, it scared the hell out of her.
Believe me, people around
here. You could see her startled in her seat, and then she made the turn, and everybody was okay. But when I see someone kind of, if I'm on a two-lane road, and I see someone kind of swerving toward the center lines, you know, it's the first thing that goes through my mind is text her.
Yeah, and you see that a lot. And when traffic is stopped, the first person in line often doesn't go right away. And we're much more tolerant here than they are in other cities.
Oh, yeah. People are.
They would be.
Yeah, much less patient.
Yeah. So I guess the hope is that this robotics, artificial intelligence will help make vehicles safer. They've added safety features that do help. But this autonomous driving thing, I don't think is coming around anytime soon.
No,
where you're just
going
to hop in a car and it's going to take you wherever you want to go.
They're still in that realm of ironing out all the wrinkles, right?
However, if they are able to get to a point where it helps with the distracted driving part in terms of alerting people, some of those things already exist, it'd be better than not. But you could institute the death penalty for texting while driving. And I guarantee you would drive and you would see at least 2-3 people doing it on every trip.
Look at the number of people who are bringing guns to the airport. Same thing.
You know, I didn't know. So today is a big day when it comes to artificial intelligence, and we'll let you know.
What is the White House going to release? Guidelines? Is that what they're saying?
They're expected to publish a national security memorandum on artificial intelligence. So whatever that entails, we'll find out. From the PJ Fitzpatrick Home Improvement Traffic Center. And each and every Thursday at this time, we check in with the good Dr. Mike Hutchinson, Animal General, LaSalle Plaza in Cranberry. And you can see Dr. Mike via our video at kdkradio.com. He's got his Pirates cap on today and sitting by the fireplace. Wow. Oh, yeah. You're ready to go. I can't
the
read.
Penguins.
Oh, you got your Penguins hoodie. And where's your Steeler and Penn State stuff?
I don't know what happened. Forgot that. How you doing?
Good, man. How you doing?
Real good.
All right, let's jump right in. Stephanie in Wexford wants to know, Dr. Mike, my dog's paws seem very dry and cracked. We haven't had much rain, and it's been really hot this summer. What can I do to help?
Yeah, so anytime you see, first of all, if there's any bleeding or it looks infected, you have to see your veterinarian for that, because that can become very serious very quickly. There's a lot of nerves in those pads, and when they crack, they can get very, very sensitive and not even want to walk. They stop eating. So if you see anything like that, please see your veterinarian right away. But otherwise, you can use bag balm. I talk about it a lot. It's a moisturizer that you can use, a softener as well. And you can just smear that on and rub it in and put paw booties on to help protect them. Keep them off the harsh surfaces if you can. And then make sure they're on supplements like omega-3 fatty acids from fish oil, because that's so good for their coat and skin. It will help for the pads as well. And then, you know, ensure that they have plenty of fresh water all the time so they're hydrated properly. And basically, that's what I do. And if they're licking constantly, they could have some underlying allergies, and your vet could help you with that as well.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry,
Paul.
Go ahead. Yeah.
No, I was going to just, a footnote, I'm surprised you didn't say Zim's crack cream might be a remedy. Sorry, Paul.
Any chance that he gets to go with the Zims, you know that's going to happen,
yeah,
Dr. Mike.
Hi, Paul. Oh, I know.
Simone in Bethel Park is asking, how can she prevent her cat from scratching the furniture?
You know, that's a great question, because, you know, years ago, almost every cat that was indoors was declawed. Now we're trying to avoid that altogether. And I think that's a good thing. But provide plenty of scratching posts. They have some really good surfaces that they can scratch on that cats can get attracted to. You can put cat attractants on them, things like pheromones that we don't smell but cats love. Catnip works for some cats. It stimulates something in their nose that connects to their brain, and it's kind of fun to watch, but might last for about 10 to 15 minutes. And he likes crack cream. I like catnip.
Catnip, so, yeah.
At any rate, the... And then you just want to make sure their nails are trimmed all of the time and give them positive reinforcement when they go to those things. You can cover up the areas that you don't want them to scratch on. You know, put some covers on them so it you know, deters them a bit. And then they do have deterrents that cats don't like, things like citrus, things that smell nice to us that cats hate. And you can put those on the areas that you don't want them at. And then just remember, keep doing the positive reinforcement. When they go to scratch on that post, make sure that you're making a big deal and maybe giving them a little cat treat.
What is catnip, Doc? I've never owned a cat. Yeah. I have family members that do, but I don't know what catnip really is, but people talk about it like it's weed in the 70s for pets.
It is. It's actually from the mint family. And this works on tigers, lions, all the feline family, on most of them, not every one of them. But it's like I said, from the mint family. And it has a product in it. I got to remember this. Nepetalactone is the product that stimulates their olfactory nerve in their nose. And it goes directly to their brain and excites them. And so they start rolling. Some cats start purring. Some start jumping around like they're nuts. It's kind of fun to watch if you haven't seen it. I have seen a few cats that get very irritated by it, very few. And then I wouldn't tease them with it. But for the rest of the cats, it's a lot of fun, I think. So, of course, that's me.
I'm going to have to try it, I guess. It sounds exciting.
Yeah.
It's a big weekend. All right.
Oh, I guess you're going to quit gummies then.
Cassandra in Moon Township. Dr. Mike, can you recommend exercises for a dog recovering from a knee surgery?
Yeah, we do a lot of knee surgeries at our practice. A lot of times they rupture their ACLs, like the football player injury, where they hyperextend the ligament in their knee. And then you have to rehabilitate them after those surgeries. First of all, there are different surgeries for that. And if your vet did something, speak to them first. I don't give any advice unless you've spoken to your vet, because I don't know what the injury is and how soon they should go back. If they put plates and screws in there, they might want them cage rested for a while, and that would be good advice. But as you're starting to exercise them again, flat surfaces, always leash confinement. If they won't use it, I always tell people great exercise is sit, get up, sit, get up, up and down are really good exercises for dogs when they have knee issues. Walking mobile, a little option, a little bit stronger, little poles, the top-sided poles, but you can set up a little go with a ranch that they have to step over, not too tall, and you don't want them jumping over it, but make them use it more. And then I tell people to go on like the side of a hill and go in an S shape along the side of that hill with a leash, and that's really good. Put their bad leg down, and if that's facing down towards the sidewalk, it makes it makes them use it a little bit more. Things like that are really good. Hydrotherapy, if you have ability to let them swim, that's fantastic. If not, you can get them water treadmills. You can go to facilities that have those and do those exercises as well. I love all of those, and I think all of them are important. And if it's really bad, we start passive range of motion where we help assist them flexing the joints and extending their hips so that they get used to using those muscles again.
You know, like a little Arnold Schwarzenegger gym for Scruffy. Feel the power of the full burn. Yes, extend yourself. All right, Doc, as always, thanks for the time.
You're welcome. It's always my pleasure. Have a lot of fun.
Have a great weekend. Dr. Mike Hutchinson, you can reach out at kdkradio.com. We have a link to animalgeneral.net. Coming up right after the news at the top of the hour with Paul Rasmussen, broadcast legend, voice of the Panthers, Bill Hillgrove. Little preview of tonight's big nationally televised game between Pitt and Syracuse from Acrisure. And Paul, you made a discovery.
I have made a discovery. Well, I've discovered the story, but someone else has made a huge discovery in Arkansas. Up to 19 million tons of lithium may be buried there. They call it white gold in what they call the Smackover Formation. And it could meet projected 2030 global demand nine times over. Wow.
What if that was on your land?
Exactly. Essential for batteries, electronics, and energy storage. One of the world's most sought-after minerals, U.S. Geological Survey announced the find this week after using water testing and machine learning to estimate the lithium in underground brine left by an ancient sea that once stretched from Texas to Florida. Isn't that amazing?
Where is this?
It's in Arkansas. Five companies, including ExxonMobil, are looking into extraction but are locked in a dispute with landowners over the mineral rights. Well, of course they would be.
Why? Yeah. Well, this sort of happened here with natural gas. Remember when all these farmers had land that they didn't think was worth much and mm-hmm. they barely scraping by became millionaires? Well, good for them. It's not going to happen to us, right? Meanwhile,
16 on the huddle clock. Now they overload the left side. Trips outside the numbers. And they give it to Desmond. He's on his way up the right sideline. 50, 40, 30, 25, 25. Touchdown, Desmond Reed.
College football tonight. The eyes of the nation will be on Acrisure Stadium. 7:30 kickoff. Pitt hosts Syracuse. And joining us, legendary broadcaster for the University of Pittsburgh, the one and only Bill Hillgrove. Bill, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Good. You and I and Paul have been in this business before you could see people on the radio, and you can check out that live stream at kdkradio.com. So excited for tonight. We have a 6-0 Pitt team against a 5-1 Syracuse team that's streaking, and they have, like we have at Pitt, a really good quarterback.
Kyle McCord, the transfer from Ohio State, is as advertised. And you heard Pat Narduzzi on Monday say that, hey, if you're not a Pitt fan or a Syracuse fan, if you're a quarterback fan, get a ticket to see this guy because he is pretty special. 19 touchdowns thrown. They're 55% on third down. The Panthers' defense has its work cut out.
Yeah, Bill, I was just reading here that Syracuse has the second-best third-down conversion rate in the country. That's going to be a big down for the Panthers tonight.
Absolutely. And I think one of the pit corners said it best. He said, we have to make him come off his first read, because if he has his first read, especially with a medium pass, he throws darts. And so we got to get him to come off that first read to go elsewhere. And maybe that gives other people time to get in his grill. So that's going to be one of the keys, that money down.
Well, I asked Panthers head coach Pat Narduzzi about McCord.
Coach, when you evaluate McCord, you think he's the best pocket passer that you've seen? Obviously, with his stats, maybe the best in the country?
Yeah, I think he's really good. I mean, there's a few things that make him really good. I mean, they're the second best passing offense in the country. That tells you right there. I mean, and it's not just a quarterback. He's got tools to throw to. You know, he's got the Meeks kid from Georgia, transfer. Gadsden is a big tight end that he loves him as a target. The Pena kid, number two, who's also a punt returner. I mean, they're athletic. I mean, they've got, and they make the catches. I mean, they catch everything that's thrown their way. So that makes them impressive. You know, the most impressive thing is what he does on third down. I think maybe top five third down teams in the country of converting third downs.
Yeah, so, Bill, it's going to be fun to watch these two battle it out and see how Pitt's defense responds to Syracuse and vice versa, because even though the Panthers are 6-0, their defense and special teams bailed them out in the last game against California, and Eli Holstein didn't have the game he usually has that he demonstrated in the first five. So we'll see if they can kind of fix whatever issues they were having.
I think he'll bounce back from that performance. I just thought it was an aberration. And, you know, one thing about Eli, he's got that, you know, eraser in his head. The last play, let's go on to the next one. And I think as a young player, and he is a redshirt freshman, but, you know, he's only in his seventh game as a college player, especially at this level. He has to, not try to make the play, just try to make a play. And I think he's understanding that better now. And I think we'll see it tonight. I really do.
You know, Bill, that's an interesting comment you've just made about Eli, because I was looking earlier at a comparison of the quarterbacks. McCord with Syracuse is second in the nation in passing yards per game. They throw the ball a lot. But Eli is sixth in total offense. Sixth.
Yeah. Well, that's what you're going to see tonight. It shapes up as a shootout, but both defenses can be stingy. I think Syracuse at 30% is among the nation's leaders in holding the opposition to, minimal plays on the money down. And so let's see which team is going to emerge. I can't see this being a replay of last year where Syracuse just ran the ball at will. I think they had 382 yards rushing up at Yankee Stadium, and that's 6 yards a carry. I don't see that happening tonight.
What is happening tonight, we're going to recognize Larry Fitzgerald entering the College Football Hall of Fame. It's Fitzgerald bobblehead night too, Bill.
And I have the chance at noon at the Student Union for a handful of select students, leaders, to have a question and answer with Larry. So I get to moderate that, and it'll be great to be with him.
That's awesome. But
fine young man.
He's about as good a person and was an incredible athlete, obviously, Hall of Fame worthy. And also, I'm going to get to meet the new AD. Alan Green will be in the house tonight.
Yep, and I think that'll be very special. All my friends at Tennessee speak highly of Alan. I think he's in step with the modern landscape of college athletics, and I think that augurs well for the University of Pittsburgh.
All right, Bill, as always, thank you. We'll see you tonight at Acrisure.
H2P.
Bill Hillgrove on the Big K Morning Show, and looking forward to 7:30 kickoff, Pitt and Syracuse. Every Thursday at this time, we check in with Pittsburgh Magazine's food editor, Christy Graver. And you can see Christy by our video link, kdkradio.com. Check out our stream. I see, Christy, you are sun splashed there seated.
I am.
Yeah. Beautiful morning, isn't it?
My daughter's home sick today. I'm hiding in my bedroom.
Oh, really? I got you. Well, we always appreciate your participation, and sure. Pittsburgh Magazine does a great job kind of documenting what's going on in and around town. And
thank you.
I understand we're getting another Ferris wheel, and it's not the Why one not? That was on the bridge, right?
No, yeah, if you didn't get a chance to ride that Ferris wheel on the Roberto Clemente Bridge, there's hope. Piat Companies recently laid out plans. This is just a proposal for the Esplanade. It's a $600 million project on a 15-acre post-industrial site in the Chateau neighborhood. That's where the East End beer pop-up is now, if you're familiar with it. At the centerpiece of the proposal is a 164-foot Ferris wheel with LED lighting that pays homage to George Ferris, the Northside resident who dreamed up the Ferris wheel for the 1893 Chicago's World Fair, another Pittsburgh original.
Yeah, I know that a lot of people in Pittsburgh, we love when we have firsts. So
yes.
People might not know, yeah, the Ferris wheel was invented here. George Ferris.
That's cool.
Yeah, and Lucas Piatt and his family, I talked to him last week. They're really excited because it's taken them a while to really get to the point now where they can start. You'll see shovels in the ground soon, right?
Yeah, and it's going to be public riverfront pavilion along the Ohio, a apartment complex, a food emporium, restaurants, a Four Seasons garden, and an outdoor amphitheater. Long-term plans include a marina, houseboats, and a destination aquarium attached to a hotel. So.
I think that's really cool, having another aquarium that you could access. All right, the Dog Pen opening soon in the Strip District.
I love this. I met the owners, Travis and Alyssa May, last year. They're new to Pittsburgh, and they came to Pittsburgh specifically to open up this place. The Dog Pen is a full-service bar and off-leash bark park on Penn Avenue in the Strip. It's fittingly the former site of the Joseph Labriola Sausage Company. You don't have to be accompanied by a canine to gain access, but if you bring your dog, you'll have to register him online or at the front desk. You could drop in for $12 a day, $40 a month, or get a yearly pass for $300. It's 7,000 square feet, indoor-outdoor. It's for 21 people 21 and over now, but there will be family days and times. They should be opening soon. Alyssa said to me, hopefully this weekend, but check out their social media to see what their hours will be. But the place is incredible. My daughter and I got a sneak peek last week, and it's just an amazing, happy, fun place. I didn't want to leave, and I don't have a dog, so.
Well, that says something. Yeah, I noticed more and more places are being pet friendly too. So we'll look forward to the Dog Pen in the Strip District, which, by the way, if you have not been to the Strip District recently, it's a whole new world. Because of what they've done with the terminal building, people don't know there's 1,000 apartments and townhouses behind the terminal to the river. And then, of course, you have Penn Avenue, which is still kind of the throwback to that vibe you like, especially on those weekend mornings.
Yeah, take a walking tour. I did it in May, and it was great. And I learned a lot of stuff about Pittsburgh that I didn't know. So it's really fun neighborhood. I love it.
All right, Lonely Planet ranks Pittsburgh as the top 10 must-visit city in the world. Wow.
Pittsburgh is the only U.S. city to make Lonely Planet's Best in Travel 2025, and it's being lauded for its affordability, unpretentiousness, and cultural heritage.
Wow.
It ranks number 6 in the top 10 must-visit cities in the world, and this is the first time that Pittsburgh has made the list in the 15 years the rankings have been compiled. I love this description. Walk around Butler Street in Lawrenceville to witness the alchemy at local coffee shops, boutiques, independent restaurants, and breweries. Soon you'll understand Pittsburgh's particular brand of magic, at once disarming and familiar. So I guess we're like the new Salem. I don't know. It's great.
Wow.
The alchemy of Pittsburgh.
I mean, that actually is pretty cool to be one of the top 10 cities to visit in the world and the only one in the U.S. Good for us.
Yes, we live here, so go out and experience it, especially this weekend. Celebrate Halloween. Do something fun.
Read all about it in Pittsburgh Magazine food editor Christy Graber. Have a great weekend. As always, thank you.
All right. Bye, Larry.
Speaking of Halloween, by the way, tomorrow, Bloomfield is going to have their annual Halloween parade. It's a big deal. I think it's a Saturday. I'm thinking Friday. You know, we got this Pitt game that I'm all confused. From the P.J. Fitzpatrick Home Improvement Traffic Center, AAA traffic powered by Bowser Genesis of Monroeville. Ellen, when's the last time you were in the Strip District?
You know what? Just a couple weeks ago. Yeah, I love the Strip.
It's so crazy, isn't it?
Oh, and all the construction, all the new housing, it is just booming, but so much fun to go down there. And in fact, I wish I was there right now with a cup of coffee and my feet kicked up, but here it is with traffic, and it's heavy now on the Parkway West outbound. We have reports, Larry, of a new accident, this one right around the I-79 interchange, so watch for delays there. The inbound ride on the Parkway West is stacking you at the top of Green Tree Hill. Parkway North, I-279, very congested for you right around the Bellevue-Westview interchange. You'll line up on Route 28 southbound through the Aetna Bypass, and then you're in heavy traffic all the way down past the 31st Street Bridge. Parkway East inbound is slow for you at Wilkinsburg. Watch for an accident on Beechwood Boulevard at Forward Avenue. Our next AAA traffic on the 5s at 8:35. I'm Ellen Gamble on 100.1 FM and AM 1020 KDKA.
And AccuWeather says sunshine. Little cooler, you'll notice that. 61 will be our high today. We were at 76 yesterday, 80 on Tuesday, and right now we're at 45 degrees. This is the Big K Morning Show. I'm Larry Richard. The candidates continue to cross and crisscross Pennsylvania. Find out that Donald Trump will be at Penn State on Saturday and stumping for Harris president. Joe Biden expected to visit Pittsburgh on Saturday. And in the meantime, let's get an update from CBS's Jared Hill.
We're seeing these candidates turn up the heat as they try to use whatever tactics they can to get to the shrinking number of undecided battleground voters. Former President Trump in Georgia with conservative media juggernaut Tucker Carlson, while Harris went one-on-one with voters about her plans in all-important Pennsylvania. In a CNN town hall, Vice President Kamala Harris pressed on how her presidency would move the country forward less than 2 weeks until the election. Harris responding to voter questions on inflation.
We will have a national ban on price gouging.
Immigration.
We have to have a secure border, and we have to have a comprehensive pathway for citizenship.
And the conflict in the Middle East.
I do believe we have an opportunity to end this war.
Harris also going after former President Donald Trump.
Do you think Donald Trump is a fascist?
Yes, I do.
Seizing on new comments Trump's ex-chief of staff, John Kelly, made to the New York Times.
He's certainly an authoritarian, admires people who are dictators. He has said that. So he certainly falls into the general definition of fascist. For sure.
He's just putting out a 911 call to the American people.
Trump brought out the fireworks in battleground Georgia.
I will protect our jobs. I will protect our borders. I will protect our families.
But his more charged comments came on social media, slamming Harris as a threat to democracy and his former chief of staff, Kelly, as a lowlife and a bad general whose advice in the White House he no longer sought.
CBS's Jared Hill, so that's kind of where we are at the moment. And joining us is Dr. Jerry Schuster, University of Pittsburgh professor and expert in presidential rhetoric. Getting down to it, Doc. Good morning. Morning, Doc. I got
morning.
You. Yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay.
So you just heard the latest, and you've been following this, obviously, very closely. We've got 11 days left until the election, and I don't know what can happen between here and there, but where we are so far, it seems like no matter what anybody says about Donald Trump, his supporters dismiss it, and no matter what anybody says about Kamala Harris, her supporters dismiss it. So, and we're pretty much split down the middle. No one can call this with any confidence and accuracy, right?
No, but I have to disagree with the commentator immediately prior. I think in polling and in reading evaluations of the polling, it seems that, according to some experts, Trump's popularity and even that of Harris seems to have peaked. And basically, you know, the focus now is probably less on the undecided voters than those voters who are just plain quiet and from all segments, both sides of the fence, and the demographics that they represent are key. And as the voters represent the silence of the voting booth, that's what's going to determine the winner of this election, not the people who are making so much noise. I think all the vitriol and everything else that's been associated with the campaign up to this point has really tired the nation and has opened the eyes of so many people saying, is this what democracy has come to? Well, unfortunately it has, and that is democracy. They, you know, the freedom to say what they think. But the point is, I think it's there are so many people who just simply don't argue politics, and whatever they might be registered, when they enter the booth, they're going to vote in the secrecy of the ballot and go from there.
And you can understand that.
The outcome.
Well, you can understand that because if you say to anybody in a group who, one way or the other, which way you're voting, you're automatically going to disenfranchise the other people in the room in half, and it just creates an animosity that a lot of people just don't want, frankly.
Right. That's exactly what's happening. And you're right on target with that. And I think to that extent, that's why the silence is deafening at this point in time. And you have so many people who really can't sit down and just discuss in the campaign in all aspects of it, or any aspect of it for that matter, and do it in a way that is just a discussion. And it opens the door to so much rancor and so much anger to some extent that people just simply don't talk about it.
Yeah, and in a workplace, we had an expert on earlier in the week. How do you deal with this in the workplace? And the best thing is, do not talk politics where you work. Right. Otherwise, you're destined for some kind of issues with the people you work with every day.
Yeah, last week there was an article in one of the newspapers, and I've forgotten which. I probably shouldn't say it since I can't remember that. But there was a sign in the lunchroom that said, "No discussion of politics at this point permitted."
Uh-huh.
You know, and it's like knocking freedom of speech. But that said, they know what they're doing. They know what happens, just as you described so accurately.
Yeah, and I told Paul Rasmussen earlier in the week, driving into work, there's a guy that has Trump signs all along his property along the roadway, and then across the street are the Harris signs in the exact position that the Trump signs are, or vice versa, whoever put theirs up first. And that's kind of the way it is, rolling
yeah,
down
is.
The road.
And someone was discussing this in the faculty room yesterday, and they said when you go up a particular road, it's called Trumpville. When you go the other one, it's called Harrisville.
Well, tick, tick, tick. Here we go, Doc. Always.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting, to say the least. And I think that in some cases, the pollsters are just, you know, when they get the information and when they signal the voters what it is they're looking for, the voters are just saying what they think the pollsters want to hear. I concur with that to some extent. I don't think it's ever reached the point on that level that it is with this particular election.
And even by, you know, anybody's standards, it's just too close to call. With these polls can be fraught with peril. So, you know,
yes, indeed they are.
And I believe what you just said. They're telling people what they think they want to hear, probably in many cases, and secretly they're going to make their vote. Maybe the October surprise is really what comes out of that secret ballot.
Well, I think, yeah, and I think to some extent, some people are fearful of saying who it is they do support, for just as you said earlier, the animosity that they might generate as a direct result of saying that.
And on that note, we will talk again. Appreciate your time as always, Doc. Thanks.
Thank you.
You're going to be watching the Pitt game tonight. I know that.
Go Pitt.
6-0, looking for another one. Dr. Jerry Schuster from the University of Pittsburgh, an expert in presidential rhetoric. Coming up right after the news at the top of the hour with Mr. Paul Rasmussen in studio will be former Pitt quarterback Pat Bostic, also senior associate athletic director of development at the University of Pittsburgh, and he was on the selection committee.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Chose the new athletic director, Alan Green, who met the media yesterday.
Another was Jeff Capel, right?
That's correct. Yeah. And We found out from Bill Hillgrove they're going to have a meet and greet with students and a Q&A that Bill will conduct today at noon. And then, of course, tonight, Pitt hosts Syracuse. Should be a great football game, a national stage for an Acrisure Stadium, 7:30 kickoff. Pitt is undefeated at 6-0, trying to keep it that way. But Syracuse is streaking at 5-1. Both have top-notch quarterbacks. Kyle McCord is second in the nation for passing. And Eli Holstein for Pitt is sixth in offense. So it should be an old-fashioned quarterback battle.
Yeah, let's have a shootout, right? I'm all for it.
It's interesting because Pitt's defense has been very good, bailed them out in their last game when their offense didn't play so well. So we got a lot to talk to Pat Bostic about, including Larry Fitzgerald, who will be honored tonight from the College Football Hall of Fame.
Lots of good news for Pitt right now, and let's just throw in the miracle that's going on right now with the women's volleyball team as well.
They're fun to watch.
Yep.
That is something special.
Yes, so it is.
If you haven't had a chance, highly recommend, and they're getting record crowds too, to watch women's volleyball at Pitt. So we'll ask Pat Bostic about all this stuff. Did you hear about this commuter? So you imagine how terrifying this would be in a morning commute, Paul. A bus driver passed out at the wheel, was having some kind of medical issue.
Oh, boy.
You're on a bus. A quick-thinking passenger jumped up to help the distressed driver with coffee still in hand. Another passenger jumped up and got behind the wheel, managed to steer it while calling dispatch in Colorado Springs. Quick-thinking passenger somehow managed to find the foot brake on the bus without any training or experience.
It was automatic. I did not know the controls. It was get the wheel, get on the radio, let them know that this man needs help. It could have been all bad. That's a big machine to run into somebody.
Can you imagine
that? Unbelievable. That's great.
And here's the more unbelievable part. He didn't spill a drop.
Wow.
Of his coffee.
I absolutely love that story.
Yeah.
It sounds like a scene from a movie.
Yeah. Sandra Bullock. What was that movie?
Oh, Speed. Right. You're thinking of Speed there. Yeah.
I don't know.
Dennis Hopper and Keanu Reeves, right?
That is correct, sir. And in terms of being in traffic, it's every day. It seems like maybe it's me because I don't experience the morning traffic, and God bless you if you do every day. But I have experienced a lot more frequently afternoon traffic in this town. And maybe it's me. I can't ever remember us having the tie-ups that we've had
on a regular basis. I've learned. I live, you know, have to go back and forth on 228 from the Seven Fields area back up to, you know, 79 in the turnpike. You're talking gridlock.
It's not easy.
2, 3 o'clock in the afternoon it starts, and it just doesn't let up until the sun goes down.
There you go.
40-yard field goal attempt to try to give Cal a one-point lead with 1:54 to go. High snap down. The kick is on its way. The kick is a line drive.
He missed it.
No good.
He missed it.
No good.
The voices of Bill Hillgrove and color analyst Pat Bostic, who wears many hats, and he's in studio with me. Former Pitt quarterback and senior associate athletic director of Major Gifts and Development at the university, and a search committee member for the new athletic director who was introduced to the public and the media yesterday, Alan Green, 47 years old, and Pat Bostic's in the studio with me. Pat, that process took about, 6 weeks?
Yes, sir. Yeah, it was expeditious but thorough. Thought that we could not have landed, and Chancellor Gable led the search remarkably, and could not have selected a better candidate for the job. And Alan Green checks virtually every box that you want to check. Has led at the highest level. Learned from his time at Auburn. Has spent time at Ole Miss in Tennessee. Worked at a place like Buffalo. He's experienced. But ready for a new opportunity and challenge, and ready to take Pitt into a new era of college athletics. So thrilled to welcome him and his family to Pittsburgh. And yesterday was a great day, and today will be as well.
Our guiding principles, there's three main ones: athletic excellence, academic success, and social preparedness. Those are going to be the overarching principles of what we do. We want to make sure that our kids achieve in the classroom, achieve on the field and courts of play, and perhaps most importantly, achieve in life. At the end of the day, we are educators. We are all here to educate young people and to prepare them for the rigors of tomorrow.
University of Pittsburgh's new athletic director, Alan Green. That said, one of the keys is navigating the unknown in college sports, which is this whole process of NIL. People have heard it, name, image, likeness. Basically, college players are now getting paid, and they're trying to figure out maybe how to put some guardrails or guide rails on this process. But in the meantime, you got to compete, and that's part of why you guys chose Green, right?
Yeah, there's no question. Name, image, and likeness, and having a competitive and well-funded name, image, and likeness program, primarily on the shoulders of generous contributors and donors and businesses that involve themselves with our process, is critical to retaining talent and acquiring talent. And that's what this is about. Ultimately, when you come to Pitt, I know this to be true, you're going to get a great experience and a great education. That is still really important and foundational to the collegiate athletic model. However, student athletes have more freedom now. They have an opportunity to earn. You've got to be able to present a value proposition that includes that and allows for them to have a competitive experience here that is successful and puts Pitt, you know, at the upper echelon of college athletics. So that is the challenge of the moment. And I believe Alan's prepared to meet it.
I'm looking forward to meeting him tonight at the game. We're going to have him on the pregame. Pitt and Syracuse, let's talk about the game, too, because Pitt is undefeated. First time they've been 6-0 in 42 years. You've got Syracuse is not the Syracuse that has been. You've got a new coach, Fran Brown, and they're 5-1, and they got an all-star quarterback like Pitt does.
They do. Kyle McCord is really good and talented. They've got a great group of receivers. They're probably going to throw it 55 to 60 times tonight. They're not very committed to the run game, although they will run it with their two running backs, Allen and Willis. But McCord is what makes them go. I think this is going to be a really fun, fast-paced game that features a lot of throwing, some points on the board. The key for Pitt defensively will be to keep the pressure up like they did against Cal. Six sacks against Cal. They need to get to Kyle McCord early. They need to get to him often and make him uncomfortable, because when he's comfortable, he's as good as any quarterback in the country.
For the first time, Eli Holstein and the Panthers offense didn't put up those gaudy numbers, you know, somewhere around 500 yards of offense a game. What was the issue?
Well, I think it started with Eli Holstein, quite frankly, and I think he would admit that he didn't play his best game. Obviously, statistically, it showed. But just trying to do too much and not taking what the defense gives you. They had some injuries up front, maybe got a little bit out of their groove in terms of being aggressive because of not having Branson Taylor and Jacoby on the left side. But I thought the turnovers, Holstein forcing the issue at times, a 3rd and 19, throws a pick, 1st and 10 from the plus 30-yard line after a bad punt and a punt return. You can't do those things. And what's gotten them to this point is Eli playing within himself, finding the checkdowns, getting the ball out of his hands, and then if he doesn't like it, go run. That has been a huge part of his game. Got away from that a little bit against Cal, and give them credit too. Their defense was good, and they made Pitt pay for their mistakes.
All right, the next part of our conversation, Larry Fitzgerald. He will be recognized tonight, College Football Hall of Fame. He's all everything. He's a class act off the field, and his numbers staggering on the field.
Yeah, I mean, 34 touchdowns, I think it was. I mean, he is, if not the best pass catcher in the history of football, he's in the top two or three in terms of just his ability to track, locate, and catch the football. I'm not talking about numbers at all. I'm talking about just sheer ability. And then the work ethic and the character and handing the ball to the official. And you know, his time at Pitt was short, but it was impactful. He's certainly one of the Mount Rushmore types that Pitt has ever produced. He's one of the best to ever play the position, and he represents Pitt and Pittsburgh with such class. So thrilled to have him back, excited to see him get his flowers again tonight, and then you know, not too far down the road, we'll be celebrating his induction into Canton, Ohio, as a Pro Football Hall of Famer.
He's definitely a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Yes.
In the NFL. It's bobblehead night, too. You can get a Larry Fitzgerald bobblehead powered by Gary Bowser and Kurt Bowser and the Power of Bowser. Appreciate their, you know, commitment to help Pitt Athletics too.
No question. Gary and Kurt and the whole family, senior, they're just, they're all in, man. They're all in here at Odyssey Pittsburgh and with the Big K Morning Show and obviously over at the Fan. They're all in at Pitt. I mean, his little bus that he's got with his all the stuff on it. And obviously, you know, rally towels for the students, bobbleheads for the fan, first 7,000 fans, I think it is, will get Larry Fitzgerald bobblehead. And Gary is, you talk about Mount Rushmore types, he's absolutely one of them, man. Great pick guy.
We love the Bowser family. Gates open at 5:30, kickoff at 7:30 on ESPN, and of course the radio network, 93.7 The Fan. Pat and I will open things up. Pitt All-American Doran Dickerson will join us. Of course, the voice of the Panthers play-by-play, Bill Hillgrove, and Cale Berger, who is part of all three phases of our coverage. Now, what do you do between here and getting to the stadium? You look like you're going to be busy.
Yeah, I got to go go on campus, got some work to do, got some meetings, and then get down to the stadium a little bit before 5 o'clock, probably 4:30. Sports Center actually is on campus today. They're on the Cathedral Lawn.
Nice.
Which is cool.
Well, they got a great day for it.
Great day for it. Should be beautiful. The fall foliage is out in force, and looking forward to a beautiful night for college football. And if you're not going to Acrisure Stadium or don't have plans, tickets still available, get down there. Great night for football and great night to wear your blue and gold.
Looking forward to it, partner. Thank you.
Thank you.
The great Pat Bostic on the Big K Morning Show. It is going to be a big night on the North Shore, and as Pat Bostic just pointed out, ESPN's got their full team here. They're on the campus at the University of Pittsburgh now, and Paul, you talk about a Chamber of Commerce-looking day. Sunny, cool, beautiful autumn colors.
I mean, if you were going to put a picture out that said football weather, this would be it.
100%. And I know we mentioned the new athletic director at Pitt is getting a lot of love on this. I was looking at Post-Gazette. They still print 2 days a week. Thursdays, they have their magazine section. But this is front page news.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought I'd share one more thought of why Alan Green chose Pitt and Pitt chose him.
So why Pitt? I got that question asked a lot of me recently of why Pitt. And I think there are so many different reasons why Pitt makes perfect sense. I had a chance to talk to our head coaches earlier today before the press conference. And they are why Pitt. I had a chance to talk to some of our donors who support this university and support this athletics department. They are why Pitt. I had a chance to learn about the industrial history of this wonderful city and about the progressive nature, not just now, but 100 years ago, when you think about steel and you think about how to shape our country and shape our world, why Pitt? That is why. When we think about education, when we think about healthcare, we think about innovation and technology, that is why Pitt. I think about this humble community. I think about this down-to-earth community. I think about how genuine people are. That is why Pitt. Incredibly unpretentious, incredibly proud. That is why Pitt.
University of Pittsburgh's new athletic director, Alan Green.
An effective speaker, but also, I think, a very shrewd person for picking Pitt because, on the one hand, that they have a lot of fundraising ground to make up, but on the other hand, the athletic programs themselves are really well positioned. Just besides basketball and football, men's basketball, you have the men's soccer team. You also have the women's volleyball team. This is a program with multiple sports that's going to be in the national conversation, and they're poised to keep improving.
It'll be interesting to see how ESPN portrays Pitt, too, because that'll be part of their storyline, meeting the new AD. But there is the infrastructure that's going up all around the Pete, right there on the campus,
yes,
which will already, in, I believe, next year, these facilities will be open. And so they'll have a really enhanced physical presence on campus for sports. And the one thing, here's the funny question that came up with a lot of, are they putting a stadium down there in Oakland. Honestly, that periodically comes up. There are a lot of issues with that. One is they have a deal. They're partnered with the Steelers at AccraSure, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking if the university doesn't partner with the Steelers, that stadium might not ever have gotten built there on the North Shore. Remember, Washington County, other counties are going, hey, mm-hmm. like they did yeah. in Boston, where right. they took the stadium out of the city. Nobody wants that to happen, right? The Steelers aren't going anywhere. However, so you have that relationship. Now, where do you put the stadium? How many seats? And where do you park everybody?
Yeah, you know, I was looking at an old picture of the Pitt Stadium, pretty much in the footprint now of the Pete, right?
Yeah, and that's...
And it was shoehorned into the land there. I mean, there's hardly any land to put it on.
Literally shoehorned.
Back in the day.
Yes, to the point where on the backside of the stadium where the frat houses are now, it was ground level at the top of the back of the stadium almost.
Mm-hmm.
So I just don't think that's a practical thing. I don't know that... Alan Green got that question yet. If he didn't, he will. And unless somebody like a David Tepper, who's a gazillionaire, wants to write a check, I think it'd be hard-pressed to raise the money to do that.
This was the same discussion that they were having in New Orleans about Tulane. Tulane was playing in the Superdome to a lot of empty seats, and they wound up getting a smaller field back on campus, and they pack it. And it goes well for them there. But I think Pitt needs something a lot bigger than what Tulane's playing in. If they were to have a new stadium, and I agree, it would take a magic touch from a beneficiary.
Little trivia, 50 years since the Steelers' first Super Bowl IX, played in
New Orleans, Tulane Stadium.
That's right, because the Superdome wasn't ready yet, or so, right?
That's right. Superdome, I think the Superdome opened in 73 or 74.
So... it wasn't ready, so they had to move the game to Tulane Stadium, which was, how many seats do you have any idea?
Larry, I would estimate 50 maybe, 55,000 probably. Rickety place.
And I think the seats were like $8. I mean, it was ridiculous.
Oh, gosh.
Compared to, did you see what they're getting for game one in Los Angeles?
No, not yet. What?
Dodgers, Yankees.
What kind of a ticket are we talking about?
$1,700 per ticket, average.
Ooh, ouch.
$1,700. Who could afford to do that?
Well, I guess people who either have the cash to burn or they want to take out a loan.
Or really, really, really wealthy people. Yeah, give me four of those. So wow. You take the family. So just say it's $1,500, right?
Mm.
So it's $6,000. Take a family of four.
And now you got to throw in parking and a soda and some food.
Popcorn, $50. I don't know what it costs.
Wow.
And, you know, Dodgers Stadium.
I mean, for that amount of money, for $1,700, they should be bringing you a three-course dinner to your seat.
Yes, and your seat should vibrate with a back massage. Come on, man. Whatever happened to the old days, you could go to a baseball game for like $25. Oh, you still can here in Pittsburgh. This is the Big K Morning Show. In the next half hour, we're going to talk to Marty Griffin, get ready for his 10 to 2 show. And Paul, a couple of stories caught my attention outside of the immediate Pittsburgh area, but you've heard this stuff before. This couple of Colorado funeral home owners who entered not guilty pleas in April after being accused of improperly storing nearly 200 bodies. They're due in federal court today.
The investigation began last October, and initially state charges were brought forward. Not long after, federal charges were brought forward. And the federal charges really have to do with the financial side of the business. So they're accused by the government of misusing about $880,000 in CARES Act money. And that is basically COVID relief funds.
And then what about the bodies? What do they have almost 200 bodies? Doing what?
That's a question I don't want to know the answer to.
Right?
Right.
Periodically, we hear about this where there were somewhere in the South, I think last year, remember there was a story about a funeral home director who was just like taking the bodies and taking the money, of course, and not really doing anything with it. So for the relatives, that would be unimaginable.
I can't imagine.
So what else is on the radar screen? Flu shots. Traditionally, October is when a lot of people get their seasonal flu shots, if you get your shots. And obviously, in the last 4 years, some people have added boosters for COVID-19. Well, now the CDC is recommending a second dose of the latest COVID-19 vaccine for people 65 and older, as well as for people who are moderately or severely immunocompromised. CBS medical contributor Dr. Celine Grounder.
The vast majority of COVID deaths we see today are among older people. So it's quite reasonable to be boosting older people at least twice a year or even 3 to 4 times a year, since the boost only lasts them about 3 months, especially older people living in nursing homes.
So the medical experts are encouraging you to get both a flu shot and a booster if you've had it before.
And now there's a new recommendation, Larry, that could lead to more of us getting an important vaccine. In addition to that, here's Steve Kathan.
A scientific panel is recommending that people over 50 get the pneumonia vaccine. The current standard is age 65 and older, and for children under 5. The CDC is likely to go along with the recommendation. The guidance is widely followed by doctors and often prompts health insurers to pay for the shots. There are more than 100 known types of bacteria that can trigger pneumonia, causing serious infections in the lungs and other parts of the body.
There you go. I know that I'm getting a regular reminder on one of my health apps to get that base covered.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, how about people that don't want to get vaccines of any sort? And if you do, though, what else do you got to get? The shingles vaccine.
That's the only vaccine that I have taken that I've had any kind of a reaction to.
Really?
And the second shot was, there was a definite reaction to it. I didn't feel that good for several hours.
Do you only need to do that once in your life?
Bingo. But they say what you go through on the second vaccine, depending on how you react, is a whole lot easier to go through than having shingles.
Yeah, I've never experienced that. And it was recommended when I got my last, you know, just checkup. Hey, while you're at it, get this. It's a 2-part shot.
Mm-hmm,
what, it's a month apart?
I think you wait. Yes. I can't remember if it was a month or a week or 2 weeks, but.
What if you don't like needles?
Well, again, Larry, this is why my heart goes out to you, because I know you can't stand needles.
God.
Back in the peak of the pandemic, when everyone was on television showing needles going into arms, there was no escape for you.
Remember, I was screaming about it. And I'm like, stop showing. Every time they talked about it, you saw somebody getting jagged. And I'm like, no, I don't want that. But you know what? I acquiesced and you just kind of, it's not that bad. Actually, it's just the thought that somebody's cutting through your skin with a needle and shooting something into your body.
Do you remember getting the pneumatic shots?
Yes.
Where they pressed the little gun against you with the air gun.
It was actually worse.
I was scared to death that they did that at school.
It was like a ray gun.
That was the one I was scared of.
I agree 100%. Here's the most traumatizing part. Since the kids are at school, I'll share this with you, is when you were in grade school and they did medical checks and you had to get in line in your BVDs with your classmates.
No, I don't remember doing anything like that.
And then you'd go into the principal's office where I was. I'm sure they had, you know, the health where the school nurse is. And there was a male doctor and a female nurse. And, you know, you're just a kid there, but they're checking you, you know.
It can be a little bit intimidating.
Turn your head and cough. Come on, man.
Wow.
This is traumatizing.
My goodness. This is a right? This is a parochial school, huh?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then all you could see on the wall was that paddle with the holes in it. And you're like, I hope we're not doing this too. Turn your head and cough. Whack!
The memories we carry with us.
I'm sorry, that came out. That was an inside story.
Okay.
I should have kept that inside.
If it was therapeutic, I'm sure that everyone's going to be better for it.
Coming up 10 until 2, Marty Griffin, Get Marty. Marty's made an international incident.
Yes. Let's play this on the BBC so everybody in Great Britain heard this.
Yes.
Ready?
This is the entire United Kingdom.
Just don't pay attention to any of it because it's all crap is what I call it. I apologize for the vulgarity, but it gets old.
Marty, you've apologized, so I don't have to, but I will anyway, obviously, if anyone is offended by that particular word. But really, really,
there it was.
I said crap.
And she was nervous.
She was offended.
How long did the interview last after that?
I don't know, but I got chicks emailing me from all over Great Britain. I'm like one of the Beatles now. So, before we get our panties in a wad over Ornstein, and I get it, honestly, but let me say this. He's a pimple on the elephant's behind. And let me use an example. There was a magistrate on the north side, has not written a bond for 3 years. There are six of them. Progressive, woke, whatever the hell you want to call them. And is it their fault? No, we elected them. No one votes for these guys. 3,000 people put them in office. Larry, think of it. 3 years, not one bond. And the rhetoric about impeaching this guy, fine. Next to impossible. Did he do his job? Did he break the law? Is he drunk? Is he a drug addict? Did he beat his wife? I'm serious. No. We're going to get into this today. It's a big, big deal. And it's a long, long road, but it ain't easy. And one more thing. Massive polling done across the state, Larry. Union guys, mostly white dudes our age. 70%. Supporting who, Larry?
I would say
Trump.
Yeah.
Lifelong Democrats. Let me say this. The Democratic Party has lost its way. One more thing. Ed Gainey, Sarah Inamorato, on October 6th, right? On the day that all the Jews were slaughtered in Israel, we commemorated that day. They signed a letter supporting Palestinians. Remember this? Not one word. Not one word about a cop stabbed to death by a homeless man on a trail. Not one word. Not one word of grievance. Not one word of support. Not one damn word. Disgusting. Not one word. What's that say about their character, Larry?
And what about the Pittsburgh police chief now offering, hey, he wants to do this referee thing so bad.
Larry loves basketball, obviously.
Larry Scarrato.
You too, though.
Well, I had three kids that played AAU.
That's what I'm saying, bro.
I spent a lot of time in a gym.
Hey, how long has it been since Pitt was 8-0?
42 years.
Oh, man.
Oh, 6-0.
Six. Are they 5-0?
They're 6-0.
So how long has it been since they were 7-0?
I'll have to look.
Wow.
It's been a while.
Is it before Dan?
Probably.
Wow. Do you know Dan Marino?
Vaguely.
Wow. Larry has a big tattoo on his right side of his chest. And it's a heart with Danny in it.
We're getting calls from Brink. Is that from Britain, Ryan?
Angle 70% people? Of the union guys. Democrats, Larry. And Bob Casey's behind in the polls. If I'm going to predict today, and I am, Trump wins. I know people don't want to hear it, but it's happening.
Ryan, save those calls from England for Marty.
Yes.
He said crap on the air, and they're going wild in other countries.
Wild.